She recovered all these memories once she started to do this kind of work. Long story short, I married them. And they still have this amazing, amazing relationship. We have lived our lives from those lies and those places of misunderstanding, that we weren't good enough, that there's something wrong with us, that we're too much of this, not enough of that.
Welcome to episode 46 of Super States, Practices of Transformation with me, your host, Joshua Peters. Super States explores the intersection of trance states with personal or professional growth. And in every episode, we're talking to world-class experts or industry leaders, revolutionary thinkers, people who share with us the latest information, tools, along with their own stories that are there to inspire us on our journey. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast through your favorite podcast host or on YouTube so you can stay up to date with new episodes. And if you enjoy the show, what I would encourage you to do is to share this show with someone that you feel would also benefit. That would be a great way to help the show grow. This week, I have the honor of speaking with Christian de la Huerta. Christian is an author, a coach, and a soulful breathwork facilitator. Join us as we go deep into the transformative power of the breath, how it can help heal trauma, and its potential for reaching higher states of consciousness. Sit back and enjoy the art and science of soulful breath with Christian de la Huerta. Welcome to Super States. I am here today with Christian de la Huerta. Christian, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joshua. So good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Christian, I like to start every episode with a guest like you answering the question, how did you get to this point? How did you get to where you are? Describe what you do and how that changes lives for people.
Well, it's a long story. But I'll make it as concise as possible. I'm a personal transformation coach, relationships coach. Been doing that kind of work for over 30 years. I do retreats, have an online coaching program. I have one-on-one clients. And one of the main healing tools that I use is breathwork. And my dad was a psychiatrist. My degree's in psychology. I come out of that psychotherapy tradition. And when I discovered breathwork after my very first session, I jumped tracks. I never went for the PhD. And that was over 30 years ago. And I now facilitate those type of experiences all over the world.
Give us an example of what that experience was like for you. So you said you attended this first breathwork course and it like changed everything for you. What happened in that? Experience.
Well, it's very relevant to the theme of your podcast. Is it took me to a really high state of being, and you know, from my current understanding, I didn't really understand it then, or I didn't have the same language that I would have now to explain it. But I think that experience of breathwork, which comes out of the yoga tradition, and I know now that many people who have had similar type of experiences using sacred medicine work, that you can get to the same kind of experience just using your breath. And so what the experience was for me was moving beyond the limited perceptions and constraints of the small mind, of the ego identity, and suddenly I saw myself as one with all. And, you know, of course I'd read about that kind of experience, but I'd never, one thing is reading about it, the other one is like experiencing it, feeling it, being it. And it just changed my life. And then I started witnessing how quickly people healed from trauma. And I've yet to come across anything that heals trauma, emotional, psychological trauma, as quickly and as effectively as it does.
So you say you've got kind of a few different ways that you help people. You do retreats, you do one-on-one clients, and then you have an online experience as well. If someone was going to work with you, what would be the Like, how would they, what would be this process? How would they know if they would be a good potential client for you or for breathwork?
Well, you know, some people, most of the people that come to me come referred, you know, word of mouth. So they already have kind of have a sense of what they're getting into or what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. For people who come in through other sources, you know, that maybe they're in one of my books or something or heard me speak somewhere, I'll have a, you know, call with them. I call them power calls with them. Get a sense of where they are, where they're being stretched, what kind of stuff they're being stretched by, what kind of challenges they're facing, what are their dreams and their goals and their desires, and then we'll figure out what would, you know, what's best for them, how to best serve their own unique process of healing and awakening and remembering and transformation.
And I imagine since you've been doing this for a while, you're probably not doing the thing that you first started with, or at least not in the same way. Like, what's changed about how you work with clients from when you started to today?
Well, I'll answer the two ways. I'll tell you what's the same, and I'll tell you what's changed. I do a lot of different retreats on different themes. How to have conscious relationships that have a chance of working, personal empowerment. Like, how do we step into power in a different way that doesn't require that we push anybody down, step on them, put our knee to their neck in order for us to prop ourselves up and feel powerful? I do a version of that specifically for women, stemming from my conviction that the empowerment of women is the single most important thing that needs to happen in the world. I do stuff about life purpose, like, what are we really doing here at a soul level, at a mission level? Common to them all, or two things. One is breath work, for that same reason that we were just talking about, mm-hmm. that it heals so powerfully and so quickly. The other one is teaching an understanding of what the ego mind is. Because if we want to have relationships that work, a life that is filled with meaning and purpose, a sense of who we are and personal empowerment, we have to understand how that part of us works and how to break free from its self-made prison of fear and lack and limitation and projection and victimization and taking everything personally and reactivity, etc. So what's different, I think, especially since the pandemic, you know, it's like many of us, I had to pivot overnight. Practically, I remember being in my last retreat before the pandemic and thinking, well, who knows how long this is going to last and what am I going to do now? Mm-hmm. But I went from 100,000 miles a year on an airplane to zilch. And my income came to a screeching halt. But I'm actually really grateful because two things happened. Well, more than two things, but the main two things that happened was that I got this last book that I published out of my head and onto paper. First, you know, computer screen first and then paper. You know, so it forced me to sit my butt down and get this stuff done. And then the other one is like, I've known for years that I needed to create virtual programming because not everybody's ever going to be able to come do a private session or even a retreat with me. And so the pandemic forced my hand and I've started up doing live events again. But here's what I'm really appreciating about the online program is because I developed a year-long program of transformation. I call it Adventures in Transformation. Mm-hmm. And what it allows me to do is like stretch out the teachings, like over the course of a year, deliver it bite size, piecemeal. I know how busy and overstretched we all are. So just a little bit of content each week, but with a couple of key differences that I'm not able to do in a weekend event, for example, which is like real interactivity, like along with the content that comes to the participant weekly, there are practices that are designed to integrate the teachings. So that they don't stay at the level of just good information. We don't need more information. We've got information overload. What we need is transformation. And that only comes from like really taking on and integrating and living from a set of teachings. And then the other thing that I'm able to do is put in a system of accountability so that to support people to do what we say we want to do. Because, you know, I've noticed over the years that in some number of people that would come to a weekend retreat and have this amazing expanded state that shifted the way, you know, like a super state, like you talk about, where it shifted the way we see ourselves, that we see each other, the way that we see the planet. And in some cases, when they went back home, even if they didn't, I mean, if they didn't have a practice, a system of support, a system of accountability, it's not hard to forget and to get distracted by life's, you know, responsibilities and distractions. And pretty soon, if, you know, if we're not paying attention, those old voices of fear and self-doubt and this imposter syndrome and the self-limiting behaviors and self-defeating thoughts like start sneaking up again. And then they'd have to come do another retreat. This system of spreading it out of a year is making the transformation a lot more sustainable.
So are you finding that the people that use the go through that year long virtual experience are having just as powerful or better types of transformations?
I think that the keyword is sustainable.
Sustainable.
The retreats are amazing because we have over the course of a weekend, we have 4 breathwork sessions, and they, you know, they have a cumulative effect. They kind of build on each other. So it's kind of a, you know, very expansive experience.
Yeah.
Along with understanding the teachings that come with understanding, you know, who we are and how the mind works and why we do the things we do. But again, what the advantage of doing that over the course of the year is that people are going through their lives and, you know, conflicts are coming up, whether it's within a relationship or at work, and, you know, like stuff is coming up.
Yeah.
And so we get to handle that and put the teachings into practice in real time.
Yeah. I think of that like feedback from the universe.
Exactly.
You go out and you try the things and you learn what's working and what's not working.
Exactly.
There's lots of different styles of breath work out there. What is the lineage of whatever style you're using?
Yeah, it's a very broad term, as you know. You know, there's anybody who's gone to a yoga class has done breath work. Mm-hmm. You know, different types of pranayama. I was trained as a rebirther, mm-hmm. Which not too many people use that word anymore because it's kind of confusing. But it's, yeah, that's the tradition in which I was, like, I come out of.
And then, so sounds like you maybe, is that, are you using that same basic process with
I use the same process.
Yeah.
I changed the name because the name, I stopped using it probably, you know, 15, 20 years ago because it confuses people. You know, in a couple of ways, some people think, you know, born again, which it has nothing to do with, sure, with that particular tradition. In fact, it doesn't belong to any one tradition. It stems out of the yoga tradition, but it can be used no matter what you believe in. In fact, you don't have to believe in anything in order for it to work.
Right.
All you have to do is be willing to, you know, to be able to breathe, check, and be willing to dive inside and dive into yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes a lot of courage, depending on how much you've done that before.
Yeah.
What do you call your style of breath work?
You know, most often I'll just use generic the word breath work. Uh-huh. But I guess my brand and my because I write about soulful power and soulful relationships, I call it soulful breath work as well.
Oh, okay. Can you give us a description of a soulful breathwork experience?
Yeah, the style that I do, it's about an hour and a half. Some of these other techniques are much longer. You know, they go for like 3-4 hours. Mm-hmm. You breathe in a certain way, in a circular, connected way, usually in and out the mouth. Which is not what I would recommend, you know, going day to day, but for this particular intense experience, it helps to magnify the effect because the mouth is so much bigger.
Okay.
So you can take in so much more life force. So, you know, they haven't studied breath work in the same way that they've done a lot of research on what happens in the brain when we meditate. They're starting now to study that, and imagine that a lot of the effects will be the same or similar. In fact, it takes you toward the end to a very profound state of meditation. It's kind of a shortcut to meditation. So you breathe in the circular connected way, which means that there's no pause between your inhale and your exhale. You exaggerate the inhale. And amazing stuff happens. The first part of it is tends to be more intense. Sometimes, you know, I do them both individually, and I've done a lot, many, many groups. Sometimes around midpoint, people start releasing, you know, like emotions. One of the ways in which breathwork works, which is more from a, you know, psycho-spiritual perspective, is we're filling the body with the universal life force, the energy that animates all of life in creation, called prana in Sanskrit, or chi or ki in different traditions, including the martial arts. So that intelligence of life courses through the body, through the energy channels, which we do have scientific evidence for now in Western medicine. So in many ways, Western medicine and Eastern medicine are coming together a little bit closer now. So, you know, what Eastern medicine has known for thousands of years, and now Western evidence has found scientific proof of.
Yeah.
So it courses through those energy channels, the meridians of the body, until it hits a block, an energetic block, and it begins to dissolve it. And what those energy blocks are places where we have stored trauma that we didn't work through, that we didn't resolve. We try to sweep under the rug and, you know, go on forth as if nothing had happened. But what used to be spiritual teaching, that everything is energy, now we know from quantum physics that that's the way it is. Even what feels solid, like this chair I'm sitting on, or the table that's holding up my computer, or the body, it's all energy, even if it might feel solid. And we know from physics, energy cannot be destroyed. So all those unresolved incidents of past trauma, and we're talking about, you know, it could be anything. It could be the moment of birth, which is traumatic for everybody involved, or death of a loved one, death of a pet, anything like that. It's psychological and emotional trauma. And also it's those energy blocks where we have stored suppressed emotions. And so just because we weren't able to deal with an emotion at a particular time, because we were afraid, we've been conditioned, especially men, you know, little boys don't cry, that we've been conditioned that emotions are weakness. And so we walk around like these uncaring, unfeeling robots. But there's a price to pay for that, because those energies just don't go away. They're not going to dissipate. What happens is they get stored in the tissues of the body. And after years and decades and a lifetime of suppressing our emotions, we walk around with layers and layers and yet more layers of unhealed stuff from our past and suppressed emotions. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that then we're trying to have a relationship in the present moment, and all of it is getting filtered through that lifetime of unhealed trauma and repressed emotions, mm-hmm. which we then start throwing on each other's laps, projecting on each other. Yikes. So like, no wonder more than half of the relationships end up in divorce. We haven't been taught how to hold them, how to approach them. And we certainly haven't been taught how to clear ourselves of this cauldron of suppressed emotions. So, but the good news is, I mean, that's the bad news. Yeah. The good news is that this simple breathing practice clears those emotions quickly and very effectively. In fact, I have a lot of therapists who send people to me, especially when clients are stuck or they hit a plateau. Breathwork is a great adjunct to that, because it shakes things up. And it's like, a lot of people say that was like years of therapy.
Yeah.
They work really well together. And again, fast. Like, that's what impressed me the most, how fast it works. And Josh was like, I work with people who are dealing with intense trauma, like rape, sexual abuse, all that kind of stuff. And it gets healed.
Wow.
It gets healed. I can't argue with the result, even though my mind might be saying, like, how is it possible that even physical healing, because I got plenty of good stories about physical healings too, can happen just from breathing. Huh. I can't argue with the results. It works permanently, with permanent results.
I'm curious about some of these examples now. If you could share a couple of the most amazing things you've experienced.
All right, well, I'll tell you an emotional one, and I'll tell you a physical one.
Sure.
So one was the person that comes to mind was very successful. She was like vice president of a multinational company. And so incredibly successful professionally, personally, she had never had a real relationship. So she came to a couple of my retreats, started to do breathwork with me. Long story short, discovered that, and I'm synthesizing it, that she had actually moved out of New York City back into this little town in New Jersey. And she realized that she had forgotten that she had actually lived in on that same street, and realized that it was just a couple of blocks down from a pediatrician who had molested her sexually. She recovered all these memories once she started to do this kind of work. And in like her last session of, I forget what retreat it was, you know, maybe fourth retreat or third retreat or something like that. But she realized that she had seen herself, that she saw herself in the middle of the session in this room, and realized that only she could let herself out of this room, right? So there was a part of her that didn't want to let go of it.
Yeah.
Right? Her father was pretty much an absent figure. So there was that, to that little girl, she received a lot of attention, like a lot of caring from the pediatrician, in spite of what he'd done, and it's just in spite of the boundaries and the abuse that he that he committed. So once she realized that she could let herself out, like that had happened on a Sunday. On Tuesday, she was having lunch with a friend, and she goes, "Oh, I don't know why I hadn't thought about this, but you need to meet my friend so and so." I think Friday of the following week, they ended up having lunch. Long story short, I married them, and they still have this amazing, amazing relationship. Wow. So she removed and she cleared, and she was able to heal the subconscious stuff that kept her avoiding real relationship, you know, not able to trust men, attracting men who were not a match, who just, you know, because that's what we do. You know, if there's a part of us that like there's, what happens is that there's a part of us that wants to be loved and longs to be loved in an intimate relationship. So we start doing this, but they start getting too close. So whoops, whoops, don't get too close, not too close.
Yeah.
And so we end up sabotaging our relationships before we even get started by attracting, by falling for people who are just not a match, people who are not available. They're already with somebody else, or they live on the opposite side of the world or something. Right. So, and of course, all of this not intentionally. This is subconscious. And so when we clear those obstacles, there's room for love and relationships. And so that's one of my favorite stories, especially as we approach now that time of the year of where we celebrate love and romantic relationships. And the other one is of a physical healing, because for me, that's the hardest one to believe. Like even after 33 years of doing it and talking about it. So my mentor, the woman that I learned this from, when she did the first time, she did a one-on-one session. And she was, you know, on her back on the floor breathing, and the woman was sitting behind her on the couch. At some point, she heard the facilitator snap her fingers. For some reason, it triggered this thought she'd forgotten about. When she was five, I forget what the argument was about, but she got into an argument with her daddy, and she got in a huff, and she was going to run away from home and got in a little bike, started pedaling, hit a pothole or a rock or something, fell over, broke her nose, was black and blue for like 3 weeks. At the end of the session, she turned to the woman and she goes, "How did you know to snap your fingers in that moment? It was incredible timing. It triggered this thought I'd forgotten about. And then I started making all these connections about how that experience had impacted my relationship with men throughout my life." And the woman goes, "I didn't snap my fingers." What they figured out she'd heard as they kept on talking about it was the cracking of the bone. The next day at 45, so 40 years later, she got up in the morning to look in the mirror and black and blue all over again. Not for 3 weeks like the first time, but for a couple of days while the body, you know, corrected itself and healed itself.
Wow.
Like, how does that work? Just from breathing? I don't know. I really
wow.
don't
know. That is a crazy and a cool story. Wow.
Yeah.
There's a, I'm guessing there's a lot of misunderstandings around what breath work is. You've probably heard some of these. So what is the biggest thing that you hear from people that they're just confused about, or maybe that scares them?
Well, I think because what we were talking about, that it is such a broad term, that people think, oh, yeah, I've done that. A lot of people come to me and say, yeah, I've done breath work, because they did, you know, 2 minutes of pranayama at the end of a yoga class. Mm-hmm. And this is like, I don't know if you heard of it. That was a big, huge thunder right next to me, right outside my window, practically. So anyway, so there's that misunderstanding. This is a much deeper dive. This is like breath work on steroids. And I know, having listened to that story about the kind of stuff that can come up, it's like people can be afraid of that. But what I always tell them is like, look, one of the beautiful aspects of having the filter of the ego mind, is like if there's anything we're not ready to deal with consciously, it's not going to come up. And in 33 years of doing this practice, I've never had one person tell me, you know what, I really wasn't ready for that. And it can be intense, you know, like people like relive moments of trauma. Sometimes it's more like neutral and you're looking at it, observing it, you know, looking at it like you're watching a movie. Sometimes you go into it like you're reliving it. So, but we're willing to feel that. It's not for nothing that we're, it's not like we're just revisiting trauma for the hell of it. It's, we're actually clearing it.
Yeah.
We're allowing that stuff that has been suppressed to surface so that I can be let go of and so that I can be cleared. So it is infinitely worth it. Even if we have to go through, you know, a few minutes of, you know, like challenging memories or have to feel grief or anger or whatever emotions come up, but it is so infinitely worth it, because like even one session, like it did in my case and for many other people that for whom I facilitated, one session can change your life, can change all of your relationships.
One of the things that really impresses me or inspires me about breath work is the, I don't know if this is right, but I think of it like the intelligence of this, of the breath. It knows where it needs to go. It, like you said, it fixed that woman's nose. It knew to do that without her directing it or like deciding I'm going to fix my nose broken thing today. It's just like that she's just doing the breathing and then the energy, the breath is going to go where it needs to go and push through whatever that block is.
Yes. And I think now you're pointing to how it works. Because, you know, if we think about it, in most religions and spiritual traditions, and even several secular languages, the same word, one word, can mean breath or it can mean spirit.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, from the Latin root spirare, we get both respiration and inspiration or expiration. Mm-hmm. In ancient Greek, pneuma was with both lung and soul. And pneuma, from which we get pneumonia. Ha in Hawaii, multiple examples of that. And to me, that's ultimately how it works. And again, you don't have to believe in anything. All you have to do is be willing to breathe in that particular way. And be willing to let go of the stuff, right? If we're holding on to whatever mommy did or daddy didn't do when we were kids, like breathe, you're going to breathe away. We've got to be willing. We really have to want to heal.
Yeah.
And it's not to excuse or rationalize what anybody did or didn't do. It's not about that. This is about us getting free.
And yeah,
that's what it's going to take.
You mentioned that during the pandemic, you wrote a book. Do you want to talk about that book?
Sure. The book is titled Awakening the Soul of Power. And got a great endorsement by Gloria Estefan, by the way, the music icon. Mm-hmm. And you know what I've realized over the years is that most of us struggle with issues around power. Like how many times have we said yes when inside? Like it's really not okay with us, and we really don't want to do that or don't believe in that. But in order to maintain the peace, or for whatever reason, we override our true feelings, our desires, even our dreams, and we settle for an illusion of security, for a false sense of security, and for morsels of pseudo love. And so, it's not a good strategy to give away our power in that way. And the reason for that is we have the reason for that ambivalence around power is like, A, we've been conditioned to believe that power is a bad thing. Mm. With quotes like, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and who wants to be corrupted? Mm. Few of us do. And what they didn't tell us about that quote is that Lord Acton was speaking specifically about political power, not personal power, which is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And also, so it, this connects to breathwork and what we were saying about the emotions, because we have been so conditioned to run away from our emotions. Like when you put all that stuff together, the fear that we might abuse power, and no wonder, how many times have we witnessed in our lives abuses of power, the conditioning about power being bad, the conditioning about the emotions being weakness. When you put all that together and we walk around with like this unfeeling people, we end up giving away our power, and it's not a very effective strategy for multiple reasons. Because a lot of times what happens when we say yes, when inside we really feel no, is that that starts building and festering into resentment. And that starts destroying our relationships from the inside. So the book is about how we step into power in a different way. How do we do it again, like without pushing anybody down and, you know, making somebody else less than we are. And it's for everybody. But again, it has a particular message around the empowerment of women. And like I said before, I feel it's the single most important thing that needs to happen in the world. And it's not to idealize women. It's not to put women up on a pedestal. Women also abuse power in different ways for the most part. But it's because as a world, as a species, we've been functioning so off balance between the masculine and the feminine energies. And I believe that when women are in 50% of power, we're going to have a very different relationship to war and poverty and hunger and social justice and education and how we treat the environment and to all of it. So to me, it's like a strategic thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we think about the price that women have paid over the several thousand years of this patriarchal power structure, you know, my way or the highway, hierarchical, you're going to do it, you're going to do what I say or else kind of thing. You know, of course, women have paid a price, but the thing that's important for men to realize too is that there's a price to pay for that, and that men also pay a price for that unequal power structure. Because let's look at a couple of numbers. If you look at longevity, in the U.S., women live on the average 5 years longer than men do. If you look at it globally, it's 7 years. And if you look at the rates of suicide, and for this I only have U.S. numbers, men commit suicide four times as frequently as women do. And in fact, 70% of the suicides in the U.S. are committed by middle-aged white men, which I think it's pretty clearly and inarguably the group that still holds the majority of the power in the world. And so what's up with that? Like, we would think the group that has the majority of the power should have more privileges, should have a higher quality of life, et cetera. They should be happier and more fulfilled. But they're taking their lives four times as frequently. It's like, wow, what is up with that? And to me, it's part of this limited and limiting way that we have defined what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. And we've gotten so confused about, you know, this whole aspect that we were talking about making the emotions less than. It's like, wait a minute, the emotions aren't strength. They're not weakness. They're not good. They're not bad. They're energy, like everything else. Depending on how we express our emotions, they have a good or a not so good effect. Mm-hmm. But there's a price to pay for that, because those energies cannot be destroyed. So they're going to start. What happens is we suppress, and then the next poor, unfortunate soul says something to us the wrong way or rubs us the wrong way, and boom, volcanic eruption, causing harm to our relationships. Or suppress, those energies have to come up. They have to come out one way or the other, so they start seeping out and showing up as physical symptoms. Mm. Cancer, heart attacks, stomach ulcers. And I think that's the aspect that connects to the increased mortality among men. Mm-hmm. And then the other faulty assumption about that is that the feminine is weakness. It's like, wait a minute. I mean, that's why they ingrain into us, little boys don't cry. But wait a minute. If you want to talk power, you want to talk strength and courage and resilience, let's talk about the power of creation that resides in a female body. Mm-hmm. And Betty White, you know, who left us, I think, a couple of years ago, I haven't watched it, but I read about the interview. It was apparently one of those multiple celebrity interviews. And somebody said something about having balls. And she said, wait a minute, wait just a minute. Where do we get this association of power and strength and courage with balls? Because you thump those little things and the guy collapses, bends over in pain. You want to talk courage and strength and resilience? Let's talk vaginas. Those things take a pounding. But seriously, right? Because I'm not putting down men here, of course. I'm not idealizing women. What I'm saying is that all of us, no matter what kind of body we're in, we need to find a balance for this masculine and the feminine energies. And
absolutely,
if we expect that to happen in the world, it's got to start inside each one of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that and resonate deeply with kind of that change the world one person at a time kind of an idea. Mm-hmm. If somebody's really interested in breath work, what would be the simplest way for them to get started?
I mean, just start noticing your breath, right? We're like, we take the breath for granted, right? And it's kind of tragic, and it's probably a good thing because most of us will probably forget to breathe, but there's a price we pay by taking it for granted. Start taking deep, conscious breath. If you do it for 60 seconds, 30 seconds, set your timer for, you know, on your phone for an hour. On the hour, just take 30 seconds. Notice your breath. Deepen your breath. Slow down your breath. Right? If you're stuck in traffic and you find yourself late for a meeting and you start getting upset, that's the moment to slow down and deepen your breath. Because what happens when we get upset, right? First thing that goes is like we shut down the breathing and we start taking really shallow breath. Mm-hmm. And that's what anchors all those negative energies in our bodies. So if we develop the presence, right, and that's what it takes when we do the practice of just putting our timer and checking our breathing every hour, by having that awareness and that presence, when the rubber hits the road and we're about to get into the argument that's going to head south and we know it's not going to end well, having that presence of mind of just noticing the breath, allowing it to deepen, it'll change everything. You know, there are swamis in India that have that much control over their bodies that they can tell their heart to slow down, and it will. Some of them can mimic death-like states that are almost indistinguishable from death. Wow. You know, most of us are never going to have that much awareness and control over our body, but anybody can slow down the breath. It's not hard. All it takes is awareness and presence and the choice to do so. Mm-hmm. Anybody can do it. What happens when we slow down the breath is the heart has no choice. The heart has to slow down, right? And notice that's the other thing that happens when we get upset or angry or afraid. The heart starts pumping. If we consciously start slowing down the breath, the heart, by slowing down the breath first, it's like that, the body begins to relax again and the nervous system begins to quiet down. So it's an incredible practice to deepen your relationship with the breath. And I mean, so many other things that we can talk about.
If somebody's also interested in doing the more deeper work, like you're talking about, the soulful breath practice, is there any risks? Like, is there anything they need to be aware of before they might jump into something like that?
There are no health risks. I mean, all you're going to do is breathe. And like I said before, and maybe it has to do with a safe container that I create, that I'm able to create. But I've never had anybody have something come up that they weren't able to deal with. Mm-hmm. Sure, on this side of the experience, it can feel scary, right? We don't know. And some of the fear that's coming up, that may come up, is not current day fear. It's just old fear from a time in our lives when we didn't have the sense of self. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the practice, the maturity, the skills, the support systems that we now have. So it's just old stuff coming up from the subconscious to be cleared. And Carl Jung, the psychologist, said that the process of enlightenment is making the unconscious conscious. And so that's what we want to do, so that we can make choices from a place of freedom, not because of stuff that happened to us when we were 5 or 10 or 15, a lot of which we're not even aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that you deal with a lot of that stuff in your hypnosis yeah. practice.
Yeah, it's a very similar kind of a thing. I like to think about it like when something happens, you're 5, so you basically make something up about that. And then you live your life as if that wisdom of a 5-year-old is true, and until you're ready to make that change, or that's you just exactly start breathing right. And the breath does it for you.
Yeah, that's it. And that's the way that I describe it too. They're just, all this stuff are just misunderstandings of young minds that didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Right. So they misinterpreted something, they misheard something, or parents maybe said something in a moment of overwhelm or anger or something. They didn't really mean it in most cases, right? Yeah, but those little minds that didn't know any better, they take it on as truth. And then we make all these choices. We have lived our lives from those lies and those places of misunderstanding, that we weren't good enough, that there's something wrong with us, that we're too much of this, not enough of that. And none of it is true.
Yeah. I hear a lot about... I see more and more about breath work, and not only just breath work, but you know, you talked about sacred medicine too, but the plant medicines, like there is a lot of energy, a lot of breath being put into altered states and how they can be used to make changes for people. What's making you excited about the future right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, just recently there was an article in the New York Times about breath work and psychotropic substances. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, and you know, a lot of these substances are now being legalized for therapists or people who are licensed to work with them consciously, intentionally. So we're at the brink of, you know, really exciting times. And even if that's a concern for you, just breathe, right? Just breathe consciously, because you can get to some of those very same states. Yeah. And, you know, to answer your question before that, I didn't really fully answer. If they want more information about it, go to my website, soulfulpower.com. And if I possibly can, as I can put them in touch with somebody who trained with me, who might be in their neck of the woods.
Great. Is there any other ways that people can reach out to you?
Probably the website is the best. I'm on social media, but rather than give all those, you know, profiles now, probably go to my website.
Yeah.
Soulfulpower.com, S-O-U-L-F-U-L, power, P-O-W-E-R.com. And from there, they can access my social media. And for your audience who go to my website and go to my email list, we'll send them a sample chapter from the book. Mm-hmm. We'll send them some of the power practices that you and I were talking about that are designed to integrate the teachings and to become more aware of why we do the things we do.
Yeah.
And then we'll send them a guided meditation that I created in the midst of the pandemic, which is about how to find trust in the midst of chaos.
Oh, sounds juicy.
and the shortcut to it is the breath is a significant part of that.
I can just imagine. Christian, what's the one insight you want the listeners or the audience to leave with today?
That no matter what happened in the past, because I know self-doubt intimately, I know self-hatred intimately, and I can tell anybody who's watching this, and I would share the confidence that all that stuff can be healed and it can be cleared. Flash forward to today, no matter what happens in my life, no matter the details, no matter the circumstances, whether a relationship works out or it doesn't, whether a project succeeds or it fails, in quotes, never, ever, ever do I question my sense of self. My sense of self-worth is unshakable. And I know that if that can happen in me, it can happen for anybody.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, Christian. It's been a really amazing conversation.
Thank you, Joshua. Thank you for doing the work that you do. Thank you for having the podcast. Thank you for having me on there. And I know that because of your willingness to have it, many, many lives are being touched and impacted. So thank you.